This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Not that running back is a big need, because I do think with Cook, Davis, and Ty Johnson, like, that's perfectly fine. They accomplished everything they needed to last year. But to see them have pick 30, pick 56, and pick 62, I mean, there's a really good running back that are going to be going off the board inside the top three rounds. So I do wonder if, you know, we see them maybe go after one of the Ohio State cats or something like that at the end of round two, maybe spelling the end of James Cook's tenure after this season.
Ian Harditz earlier this week on Schulten Bulldog. I love Bulldog there with a nice little
Oh, that was Mike who did that.
Oh, was that?
Yeah, that was Mike.
I thought that was Bulldog.
He's big on the Ohio State guys.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, though, to think about running back possibly even in round two. And I know that not a lot of fans would love that pick, for example, but the Bills do have a history of picking a running back in round two or round three with this tenure. So, they love throwing a mid-round pick into there, or early to mid-round pick into there. You think of Singletary, you think of Zach Moss, obviously James Cook, and then Ray Davis with a fourth. They love adding to the running back stable pretty consistently with Brandon Bean's tenure. So brace for that potential that the Bills might take a running back maybe even earlier than you would expect them to.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that there will be at least some kind of wheeling and dealing going on either in the first or the second round when it comes to movement and getting a pick swap in so that they can get a third round pick back in there, because they love having that maneuverability with a third round selection, and they don't have it again. Last year, they find a way to do that. They shuffle down a couple times with a couple of trades to get out of the first round and end up at pick 33. What do they get in return? A pick swap that throws them back into the third round. So we'll see what they do and see how creative Brandon Bean gets with this draft as well.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Brandon Bean also has a history of doing a solid job, so I don't think it's I'm not like uber worried about anything happening, you know?
It's just that I want more than solid this time around because of the fact that there hasn't been a star player drafted to this team in a little while, and I think he's due. Let's go. Like, come on, man. Let's give me another guy that becomes a fixture on this team, not just a solid player, but a fixture. I need that top 10 in the position guy, like a Terrell Bernard. But Christian Benford is arguing to be a top 10 corner at this point. But I need more of that. I need a little bit more. Give me one more of those kinds of players. And whether that's another safety that you can hitch a wagon to for being one of those guys, or give me someone on that defensive line that can really be a shining star for years at a time. I need something like that. Give me another taste of not just hitting, but killing a pick. Mm-hmm. That's my goal here with this draft. They have 10 picks. I obviously do not think that they're going to use all of them. There's not much in the probability of using all 10 of those picks, mostly because they're a good team. 10 players aren't fitting on this roster. The numbers game is enough for you that if they make more than 8 selections, I'm going to be genuinely surprised. Because one, that means that there were not a lot of trades that they made, or two, they got enough picks back in return to it, but I'm still surprised that they would have taken more than 8 players. I think 7 is a perfect over-under, I think, for this. 7 or 7.5 for how many selections they actually make. Because I feel like 8's probably a great threshold. And you would expect that maybe they trade enough that like 7 ends up the amount that they pick. What would you say to that? Over-under 7.5 picks that they make out of the 10?
I would agree. I would say I was leaning towards maybe 6, but I'm kind of at 7 right now. So I'd still say under, but 7 or 8 sounds about right.
Yeah, I feel like that's a solid line for it. I'm not a gambling person, so like me trying to create odds is like the silliest thing that I will ever do. But I'm going to try. I'll try to think of like what's the good threshold that like people will then start thinking, interesting. Maybe that's the perfect amount of players that I would settle for here is like 7 or 8. In your draft class. 7 obviously being that number, but sometimes when you have that many picks, you might want to use them. So maybe right. It is, maybe 6.5 is the actual line to use, but again, I don't create odds, and that's why. All right. Purdue and McNeese, it's about to start.
Let's go.
Your
inner Boilermaker is going to show.
My inner Boilermaker is going to show, and my stomach is going to start boiling. Because McNeese comes in with Swag, the team manager that they have that has the NIL deal. Amir Khan, a nice story that they had on him leading into the game.
Did you see the cheerleaders had him on their socks?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But, like, that's Swag, and I don't know how well you do against Swag. It's an immeasurable trait. And McNeese played pretty well with it. Considering they got their first tournament win in the in their school's history just a couple days ago. And
yeah, and that was their fourth trip in school history, so they're 1-3 now.
Yep.
So they improve. That was a big game. That was a good one. I did enjoy that.
That was a good one because, I mean, mostly because Clemson made it interesting. It was a farce at first. Because Clemson scores 13 points in the first half. If Purdue does that here today, I'm going to just, like, cry.
That would not be good.
Probably on air.
Probably cry on air.
Probably on air. Purdue coach Matt Painter has a 7-4 record in the round of 32. So do more of the first part. Don't add to the second stat there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the TV, like, getting ready for tip-off. One player on McNeese, he's got so their colors. I do believe it's blue and gold. One guy has a yellow shoe and a blue shoe, and I'm like, that's drip.
It is drip. Dripping with drip.
Yeah, they have swag. I don't know what to do. I'm very concerned.
Who are you rooting for?
I mean, I'm rooting for Purdue, and they get a nice bucket to start it. Yes, let's go. We're back, baby. We're so back. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about Purdue basketball. We don't live in Indiana. I'm good. But it's nice, though, to get the game started here for the round of 32 underway in the second round. Joe, when it comes down to the Bills, though, with how this draft is going to look and how aggressive you would like them to be in this sense, that's really what I think it comes down to is how aggressive can you get? Because, again, you have a good team. You have a good roster. You do have a lot of holes that you have to fill. And with that, though, there is the challenge of how aggressive can you be? And You need to fill this roster with quality players. That's the big thing.
Yeah. And that's, I don't want to see any wasted picks. And I'm not saying you would know right away, right?
Yes.
Because you don't, you never know.
You never know right away.
Look at the Kyrie Elam situation, right? You never know how things are going to turn out. But don't just, if there is a need on defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say maybe a running back, depending on the James Cook situation, whatever you want to read into that with. And a late, would you take a wide receiver late? Maybe.
Absolutely.
Right?
You find a flyer on a fifth or a sixth round pick for a wide receiver. Absolutely.
100%.
I don't think that you go away from this draft class without getting at least one wide receiver.
No, but you need to focus. And I would have been very frustrated last year if they went all defense. And I said that. I was very outspoken because that seems to be a lot of what they like to do, right? The defensive players are the ones that stick. Minus Dion and stuff. You know, there are certain outliers, but defensive depth as well. I would like to see them fix their defense up with young, talented players and really set this defense up for success, because the whole thing that really frustrates me at the end of the day, and this isn't even with the front office, it's with the, oh, we're back on the, and this is not Jeremy Joe, these are just the fans, right?
Yeah.
We want a wide receiver, the callers this week. Well, trade up for a wide receiver. We need to replace Mitch Trubisky, draft another quarterback at some point. No. Wide receiver is not a first-round need as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think it's a first-round need unless my mock draft simulator happens and Luther Burden shows up at 30.
Right.
Then just run the car to the podium. Just do it.
Yeah.
But obviously the board will fall as it may, but I do think that, for me, it's not even about the first round. I think it's, if you don't come away with two-thirds of your draft class being on defense, I'm going to be a little confused.
Confused and frustrated. I will be struggling to grasp the
context.
Concept
matters.
Of what
context
just
matters. Sometimes the board falls in a certain way. That's what I think. Like, I'm not going to.
But if they just deviate from the game plan, I'm out. Like that really is just confusing to me.
Well, it's too soon to get mad. That's the other thing.
Context
matters.
Wouldn't you be? Like, I'm saying.
That's why
context does matter. Yes.
That's why I haven't said it, because I know context matters, and I'm going to be sitting here for every single minute of the draft. And I mean, when I say here, I mean literally in the chair that my butt is warming up right now. That is exactly what's going to happen here.
Yep. I don't know. I just, the whole thing of, you know, you're blind, and then they'll blame these fans and everything. They'll blame the defense for being the issue, for not being able to get over the hump, but then you don't want to help it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Oh, the defense let down Josh Allen. I heard that so much in the MVP argument. Why wouldn't you want to help the defense then? Why
exactly?
Like that's where my confusion lies, because I've had conversations, not even on the air, off the air, just with people I know.
But they're like,
oh, if they draft all defense, blah blah blah. I'm like, the defense is what needs the most help.
The defense does need the most help. But this is where again context matters, because you do have to remember Josh Allen had the football at the 2 minute warning each of the last two games.
Right. And I'm not discounting that. All I'm saying is,
so that context does matter. Like, yes, it's tough though that like you've had these issues, especially defensively in the postseason, where like they are the group that tends to wear down the quickest.
Mm-hmm. Like they get out.
But there's context.
Exhausted.
Your MVP quarterback did have the football at the 2 minute mark.
Right, and I'm not just saying last season when I say that though.
Yeah. And last season, I think that this past season, but 2 seasons ago, oh my God, I saw something happen that I've always wanted to see happen.
What, a reverse dunk?
No, an air ball that shot past the rim. I've always wanted to see that. anyway, when it comes down to it though, like two playoffs ago, the defense did their job. And it was the offense that only scored 20. So at some point, that is, you know, offense didn't do its job. Offense was not good enough. And That said, what just happened? Well, what just happened was your defense let the Kansas City Chiefs score 30 points for the first time all year. That's not good enough. And you need more long-term talent there anyway, so that you have those players there on rookie deals and you're able to go ahead and use the cap to the best of your scenarios and the best of your situation. That's the most important part to me, is making sure that you have a defense that can go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because heaven forbid that something were to happen, and I'm already knocking on wood, if something were to happen on offense where there's a major injury of sorts, I'm not going to name names.
No, but we all know.
We all know why I'm knocking on wood.
Yes.
But if something were to happen, a better defense allows you to survive, to grit mm-hmm. out a couple of wins and maybe even steal them.
And where has the injury bug bitten the hardest the past few years?
It has been on defense.
You had A.J. Klein coming out to play the Chiefs in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Though last year, I think it was the wide receivers that hit the hardest.
Well, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, statistically in the playoffs,
typically it has been, yes.
Because Matt Milano's out. Like, you lost everybody pretty much. And then yeah. you have Von Miller, who's basically a shadow of himself. And it's like, you can't do anything. And yes, I will agree, the wide receivers, with Cooper's injury he was playing through and Coleman was injured, right?
Yep.
And last season, it was
Shakir
a mix of both.
Got banged up, and the wide receiver core clearly missed him.
Yeah, so I do think last year was the wide receivers, but for the sample pool, if we're looking at the entire data pool when we're looking at this, the McDermott, Brandon Bean, Josh Allen era of the playoff runs and the heartbreaking ends to seasons, it's been defense more times than not.
Exactly.
Injury-wise, exactly. Like not being able to hold up to par to these offenses. And then it is a shootout because your offense can still hold up with their defense with Josh Allen. He just keeps firing down the field. It becomes a shootout. And then here we go. The defenses are both exhausted, and it's just whoever scores last. You know, like that's what it is.
And that's why there's a fair argument for wide receiver being a priority again this year. Because you look at that wide receiver core and you think the names on paper, it's not good enough. So that's why I say I won't get mad. I might be confused, but I might not be mad if they were to target one early, because that is something that happens. Context matters. You need to make sure that that is the case. If you don't have your context, if the board falls a specific way, if, for example, they know they can get a defensive tackle later on in this draft because of how deep that class is this year, I'm okay with it. Context does matter at the end of the day. So nothing is ever going to be exact, and that's how we should always treat it.
I'm with you. I do. As much as I said I would get frustrated, I think I would. But like you said, context matters. If they just blew past the game plan, I'd be frustrated. But if they work with what they have, and that's the way the board falls, and that's how it ends up, okay, I'll deal with that, you know?
I think I might have to drag you in for every single hour of draft coverage this year.
I'd love to be there.
Just so that you learn it.
Yeah. I mean, I was there.
Learn it, know the misery
mm-hmm.
of being here for every single hour.
Yeah. Well, that'll be some pretty entertaining sports talk Saturdays after that.
Yeah. But hey, that's
we
all.
We did it for the NHL draft only to see Beck Malenstein be the big move, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that, we're going to take a quick break here, early break, and then get ourselves a little bit of a smaller segment coming up next, and then Brian Colzie will help wrap the show up with us here on Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley, you're here on WGR.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Omicid.com. That's Almased.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buffalo, a high stick in front. Doesn't appear to have been called.
Yeah, there give him the puck.
Give him the puck.
Give him the puck.
Sabres throw it away, and this is going to maybe go into the net, off the boards. Oh, my goodness, it did.
Give him the puck.
Yep, that play. Sorry, I had to.
I have to take that away from you.
Jesus. Is there any other way to describe it? Is my question.
No.
So the way to describe it is that's a tough image from seeing the Sabres last.
They lose ultimately 5-2 against Utah, and the goal that makes it 4-2 is one that they score on themselves to.
And the worst part about it is they drew the penalty.
They drew a penalty, and I do get Tage Thompson not knowing there was a penalty. Like, I do understand that.
Right. And a lot's happening on the ice. You can't.
And teams have scored on themselves a decent amount when there's a delayed call. Like, it's not some. It's a not zero number. It's not like it's something they don't do.
No.
So, yeah, that's.
That's one positive thing.
I'm not going to go ahead and say, "Oh, can this team get any lower?" This is not that. This is not that. Like, this is not the. Oh, this is a new low point for them. No, it's not. I think this is a little bit of a sensationalism at this point of like, it's a new, like, there have been like 14 different points that are a low point this year.
It's the new fans, or not the new fans, just the general NHL fans I see, right, causing that dynamic to happen. That just comment, I just feel bad now. This can't get any worse. When realistically, it's like, okay, like, it's just a bro moment at the, like, to put it that way, I guess. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the absolute bottom of the barrel of things that have happened. But, like, for an outsider looking in, sure, you can say whatever you want. But I think that's influencing the conversation a little bit.
It is. And, like, there's plenty of, like, even Sabres fans that, like, longtime fans even, that are, like, miserable in a sense of, it's a new low point. It's a new low point. I don't like this year. You could argue with me that the 13-game losing streak is a new low point. You're probably right on that. They were in a playoff spot, as a matter of fact, challenging for second place in their division, and then they lose 13 games in a row to be effectively the only team out of playoff contention at this point in March.
Yeah.
Like, you put yourselves in that big of a hole. Like, that is a low point. That is something I could say is noteworthy, because 13 also matches the amount of years that you had currently not been in the playoffs. I can respect that, but like an empty net goal in a game that doesn't matter. No, this ain't a low point.
No,
I mean you put the fart noise in there. Like, yeah, I guess that's probably the best way to describe it. You're probably right, because it's not a low point. Like,
no, like of course, like it's not the lowest of the low.
We've got Bills fans chiming in on social media of like, has this ever happened to the Bills? Yes, it has. It's called they didn't recover a kickoff in their own end zone, and the Jets got to land on it on Rex Ryan's final game.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no, that was Anthony Lynn's first game.
Anthony Lynn's first game, because Rex Ryan got fired before the final game of the year.
Yep.
So even more on that. Thank you, Evan. Is it like the Bills are the same franchise that started Nathan Peterman in a game?
Right. They picked Nathan Peterman to be the starting quarterback instead of hanging on to Tyrod Taylor, the quarterback that got them into the playoffs. And you know what? Maybe has a similar playing style to Josh Allen in the mobility category. Oh, no, you know what? Peterman had just had a rough go last season. You know, he broke the record for interceptions thrown in a single contest. We're going to put him out there as the starter. We got all the confidence in the world. What does he do? Absolutely blows up in their face. That's where that, you know, we mentioned the whole Tyrod thing earlier today and how they moved on from him. That's one thing I wish they didn't do. I mean, it worked out now, like where we're at, I guess, in Josh Allen's development. He developed, but Tyrod Taylor for a season could have helped, I think.
Yes, I agree with
Sorry.
That.
No, I had to jump on that because we did talk about that earlier. Yes. But yeah, no, this is not the lowest of the low by any means for a Buffalo sports team.
The Sabres, it's not this new low thing. Like it's I don't want to call it overly dramatic. It's the same. It's
well,
the
it's just
same
piling
crap.
On at this point. It's piling on from the national.
It's
fans.
Not.
That's
it's
it.
Not a low point. It's just the same crap that we've seen for 14 years now.
We should just stop saying this is rock bottom.
Yeah, we're already there. We just haven't left. When was the moment of rock bottom? That's the part that's open for discussion. But they're not.
I was standing trying to find my way out of rock bottom.
Yeah, they're not digging a new hole. They're just hanging out there.
I was standing trying to find my way out of rock bottom, and now I'm just sitting there twiddling my thumbs.
The Sabres have made themselves. No, they're not digging. They're not digging. They're sitting on the bench at rock bottom, and they're talking like this. Like in SpongeBob. Like, that's their second language now. They've been there. They're citizens of rock bottom.
Maybe they'll understand this then.
There's no.
Son of a. Come on.
I don't know what's worse.
You teed that up. You absolutely teed that up. Come on.
I did. But I don't know what's worse at this point. The fact that you keep playing it, or the fact that I keep laughing at it because I have the same humor as a 12-year-old boy.
Here's the thing. I keep playing it because it speaks volumes about what we can't say. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know. That's probably one way to say it. You're absolutely right, because it's not anything that we haven't said.
No, we don't want to be redundant. That's just the best way to put it to the point.
Yeah, and for me, the new part is, to anyone saying that this is rock bottom, or, oh, it's a new low point. No. We have to find where the actual low point is and realize that they've bought in property in rock bottom. And they've been there for a while.
They've
two
invested
years ago,
real estate.
2 years ago, they took a vacation. And then they went back home.
Yeah. They're actually the real estate agents of the rock bottom town.
Yes.
They're the mayor, everything. Any higher power.
2 years ago, they took a vacation. Enjoyed the finer life. Still missed. And after missing, said, okay, we'll go back home.
I think it's just frustrating because you think it's more frustrating now. And heading on to year 14... Because two seasons ago, it looked like the tide was turned.
The ascension was beginning.
Yes. You were 1 point out. the entire team was frustrated that they were 1 point out. It looked like they were going to come back with a vengeance on the NHL just to sit and crisscross applesauce at the bottom of the hole in rock bottom. To be complacent where they're at. And I'm like, I don't get it. I really don't.
I don't think that they want to, like, nobody wants to be where they are.
No.
It's an enviable position to be at this point. And that's the part that I will have empathy for Kevin Adams is like, yeah, you're the general manager of a team that is in a 14-year playoff drought now. Of course you don't want to be there. Of course you're trying to figure out how to actually fix it. The only problem is that the methods are not working, and typically that alone will get someone fired. And just because he's being held on to does not mean that they're just sitting here complacent. It is, like, it is and it isn't. You want things to do better. But at the same time, when Kevin Adams does make moves, he does seem to cook every now and then. I want him to just do more. I just want to see more of it because I see the potential's there.
More activity.
Because I know that he's not getting fired, I want to see what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
That said, his track record after 5 years does get people fired. That is a truth. That is not just something that you can just say and you take it lightly.
Normally, after year two or three, questions can start being asked and answers are demanded by year five.
But that's not
he's going to have
accusing,
year six. But that's and I not, think it's going to be.
Oh, sorry. That's not me accusing Pegula of being cheap in the moment either. That's Pegula possibly being invested in Adams. It's not he wants to pay. He doesn't want to pay severance pay. I can't guarantee that. I don't hear from him. We're never going to hear that.
No.
It's a speculative thing. What I am going to say, though, is that Pegula likes to be involved. How does he stay involved? Well, with a general manager that keeps him involved. That's how.
Yep. And I think, listen, I think year six is the final chance for Kevin Adams.
Absolutely. He's not getting fired. We all know that for this year.
If it this is, happens again,
it is
if they, this th- season, there's no excuse.
This next season is going to be a big deal.
He needs to be gone if this happens again. But I'm willing to wait it out at this point. Because what could be worse?
It's mostly because of the fact that, like, we know the reality at this point now. He's not getting fired. He should get fired based on the track record of 5 years now. But he's not. So what do? You grit your teeth, you await the reality, and now you have to see what he can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it is. And I learned this mindset, oddly enough, thanks to Josh Allen. I hated that pick initially. But then the minute it was made, I'm like, I don't care about being right. I want to see what happens now. And I want to be proven wrong. And this is exactly that moment right now. I know Kevin Adams is not getting fired. I'd want him to be. But now that is not the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I want him to, like, it's heartless to say. It's not that I want people to lose their jobs. It's that, you know, oftentimes you get removed in that sort of situation and I'd expect that.
Yeah.
But when I say that, I also do mean he's not getting fired now. I look at the reality of the situation and go, what can he do to make this better? And that is the expectation that I have to hold to it now.
Yep.
And that's where we got to be.
And I'll have open arms. I'm not going to sit here and badmouth him for an entire season and off season, but there are expectations for year six. If things do not go the way they're going to go, the music needs to be faced, and that's where I'm at.
Yes. The heat that's already there will be intensified is all I'd have to say.
You're at a slow burn right now. That oven's getting cranked up.
I don't even...
Cranked up.
Joe, this ain't a slow burn anymore.
Boiling.
When it comes to the fans, yes, people want him out. Like, he is at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is setting in that he's not getting let go. And if things do not improve, that fire intensifies.
Yeah.
So it's already there.
Right. You're right. The water's boiling. It's just the question if it's going to boil over or not.
Yes. All right. We'll talk more about this or not. We'll see. With Brian
Koziel.
See where Brian's at. And more or less... I'll be sure to ask him plenty about how his basketball watching is going as well. Purdue 27-11 right now with 7:46 in the first half. We are boiling up, baby. Let's
yes,
go.
Yes, I have Purdue winning too, so yes. I'm rooting for that. So we're boiler
here for
up.
This. Boiler up. And Purdue is getting it through everyone right now. They have seven players that have made baskets on this team. So all ready to start this game. So I'm quite happy with how things are going for them to start out. I'm very happy with where I'm at. We'll talk to Brian Koziel coming up next here. Sports Talk Saturday wraps up next segment here on WGR. Last segment here of Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley, and joined now on the Western Hotline by Brian Koziel as the Sabres get started at 2 o'clock today. Pregame will start at 1, but I figure why not get a little bit of an extension in here. We talked with Pat last week. We'll talk with Brian today so that we can keep things going here. Maybe I try to bother Paul next week. Brian, what do you think?
I think anyone that is willing to come on and be in a good mood to talk about the Sabres is someone that should be commended. So, yes, pass the baton, I guess. Or it's yes, pass the baton. Or maybe it's the other way, right? Who draws the short straw? It's the long straw. Getting to join you is the good part.
Hey.
When you tell me that you want to talk Sabres, that's the bad part.
Yes, no, and also mood yes. is not a the proper mood's not a requisite here. You could be angry about them and talk about them because, it's still – it is what it is. And Brian, the last time we saw them, there is something to it where that was an ugly sight, but I'm starting to get to a point where it's, no, this is not the new rock bottom. This is not a new low. The Sabres have been hanging out here for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in the basement since December. So it got bad so fast, too. That's the thing. Like, if you go back to... And hold on, I'm gonna get the date here because I know exactly when it was. It was the third Saturday right before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. in November. Hold on, it was. I want to get the date. November 23rd. The Sabres won one in Anaheim, San Jose. That day, Saturday, and they were in third place in the Atlantic and two behind second place. And you thought, okay, they recovered from the Prague disastrous start to the season. They've recovered from a couple of early season injuries. And Lindy Ruff has this team not only starting games strong, but playing with accountability and all the things that defensive zone awareness, smarts, intelligence. Like, hey, all these guys are coming around. And Lukanen seems to be picking up right where he left off last year. And I'm sitting there thinking, hey, this is going to be a cool story. Lindy comes back, gets this team to the playoffs, breaks the drought. Like, we're going to be having all these great games down the stretch. And, well, here we are with now what has been essentially almost 2 months' worth, or maybe 3 months' worth, of meaningless games in the standings. I know that there was a time there where we thought, well, if they could win 7 of their next 8, and Lindy Ruff had the 5-game goal increment to get them back in it. But ultimately, in the end, they've never... ever threatened truly to leave the basement. They're still sitting there. They still have to at least win 2 games to even catch pathetic Philadelphia, who's 2-8 in their last 10. And they're farther away from wild card 2 from where they were at any point during this time period of these last 3 months here. They're 14 back. It's been 9, it's been 10, it's been 11, it's been 12. Now they're 14. It's the largest gap that we've seen over the course of this season. And the only real pizzazz that we've had during this year was a big trade at the trade deadline with Dylan Cousins for Josh Norris. And Josh Norris has barely played. So what is all this being said here? There's not a lot of reason for fans to be optimistic about maybe what's next, which is ultimately what we're always doing, Derek, is thinking, well, what could get us to have a promising next? I don't know what the promising next argument is. That's the hard part here. There was always the, well, there's going to be a coaching change, so that'll get them through next season, or there's going to be a GM change. I don't think either are going to change. I could see Lindy Ruff stepping down. Mm-hmm. I feel like at times this year he sounds like a defeated man who has realized that he's been coaching forever. And, you know, some people have said there was some talking into that maybe he didn't even think about wanting to come back to coach. Well, That's the only thing I could see happening. But if Kevin Adams was allowed to do what he did at the trade deadline, which is take care of two new contracts and make three trades, one of them a major one, that would indicate to me that there's not going to be a GM change. So what is the promising next? And unfortunately, I don't really have that line to give you.
The one I could dig for here, Brian, because even a couple days ago, before that Utah game starts, the thing that I'm saying before teeing it up to you for pregame is they're fighting for each other. And that's something that I'm really looking at as a net positive. Like the Detroit game, yeah, they lose 7-3. But I walked away from that game going, I can accept this because they're sticking up for each other now. They're really rushing in to save for a select few people, but like, they're really sticking up for each other here. Josh Norris is getting into these scrums just like he's been here like day one with his besties all of a sudden. And here I am going, fights in three straight games. They're punchy now. They're more enthusiastic about defending each other. It's something to really look for. And then that game plays out and it's like, oh, yep, here come the ugly highlights again. But all you got to do is, for me, find some way. Like you said, Brian, give fans a reason to look for next year. And while we don't necessarily know what that is at the current moment, I would at least like to see them continue to show up for each other.
Yeah, I like your point in terms of morale, in terms of the locker room, in terms of maybe the thought process of, you know, players talking amongst themselves about what it's like to be a Sabre. I still don't know how much overall value that has in the standings where it matters the most. I think it matters a little, but I don't want to put too heavy of a weight on it. I think it's a good, I think it's one of the boxes that need to be checked if ultimately they are going to solve this, what seemingly is an impossible puzzle of getting themselves back into the postseason when half the teams make it every single year. And all you need is the flip of the coin to land on your side once, which it hasn't now for what's going to be 14 years in a row. I do value that. I think that the Sabres lack that quite a bit. I hope that what we've been seeing and what you just laid out is going to be one of the boxes that need to be checked off, I think, for this to turn around. But still, ultimately, in the end, try to convince a free agent to come here. I don't know how you're going to do it without majorly overpaying. I don't think that Kevin Adams has the easiest job in the world. He spelled it out, obviously, with some lines that led to some easy jokes, for sure. But ultimately, there are contractual restrictions that I know that he's going to have to fight through, or whoever the next GM is, like who ultimately doesn't have the Sabres on their no trade list with how seemingly popular now this is becoming a trend when guys sign contracts now. It feels like anybody that has of top two line value or top pair defenseman value have this now built into their deal. And I got to think that Buffalo is almost on every list. You know, we saw some of the stories from The Athletic, Derek, over the last week or so, talking about the franchise and ranking the ownership and how the Sabres are run. And, well, we all know that those rankings were right where the Sabres are, in the basement. And Terry Pegula's ranking 32nd among 32. So, and other than Winnipeg, which, you know, feels like the North Pole to a lot of guys, Buffalo is the second least desirable location for NHL players. That makes no sense at all. You have, like, you know, 40% of the NHL that grew up in Southern Ontario. Like, this could be an ideal situation. You have access to your home and your family and your friends in a hockey city that people care about and are passionate about. Back in the day when the Sabres were good, it was an ideal fit. And we've seen many players and hockey people in the league retire and live here well beyond their playing days. But right now, trying to convince someone to come here, like, that's a very tough task, whether it's via trade or whether it's signing in a free agent. And the thing that really struck me about the Terry Pegula ranking of him on The Athletic being 32nd of 32, his priorities clearly have shifted toward the Bills. We know the budget seemingly is different than what it was on day one when he came in and essentially said there was, you know, he'll drill a new oil rig or whatever he said. But his actions to me are what's most alarming. I mean, think about back in the day, Derek. I don't know, do you remember this? The Sabres were trying to pull off a trade to get Robin Regier from Calgary, and he flew out there to literally convince to talk to him on his private jet. Like, he flew to Calgary to talk to this defenseman from Calgary about why it's going to be so great to come play for the Buffalo Sabres, and it worked. They pulled off the trade with Robin Regier. And that, to me, felt like a huge milestone. Like, look, this owner is so much invested. He cares so much. He's going to be the one that gets this hurdle done that might be in a trade. Could you imagine that happening now? I don't see Tara Pegula flying to go speak with a player to have that conversation to convince him. Now, I'm not saying he does. He won't, but it just seems as though, and we truly don't know because he never talks, that he's truly that invested. And I'd love to get some indication that he's as invested as he was when he was on that plane flying to Calgary to go convince Robin Regier to come be a Saber.
Yeah, and I think, though, Brian, the other part of this is, while it can never truly be confirmed or denied on either side of like how much he's investing monetarily or personally, that's tough to find because you're never going to find that out, not from the owner. That's not something we're ever going to get the true information of. But
why would you want it to be a secret if you are doing it?
Yes, and like, that's the thing. You want
that's the thing, like the
confirmation
the image. Yeah, the image out there publicly, and look at The Athletic was just the latest to throw another public, you know, piece of evidence out there, whatever they have. Why would you want that out there?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, you know, I'm not advising Tara Pegula. If I was, I would say, look, I understand maybe you don't love speaking to the media or doing interviews or interacting with fans or whatever, but right now you are portrayed as this. And the longer that you stay silent, we know how information works these days in the world. The longer that information's out there without it being disputed, it can tend to turn into fact amongst public perception.
Yep.
So why would you want prospective player, even if you don't care about the media and you don't care about the fans, obviously I wouldn't advise that either, but ultimately for your team to have success, you need to convince other players in the league that playing for the Buffalo Sabres is a good thing. But the longer that this image is out there, the task becomes harder for whoever the GM is. So I just, as an owner who would want the best for his franchise, why wouldn't you want to get out and dispute all this negativity that's out there when you have the power to do so? It's very easy. And he's choosing not to, which I think is a mistake.
Yeah. The perception is probably the thing that they would need to clean up the best. Brian, let's end this chat because we got to get you going here. But I want to end this chat with a quick little one-liner for you. How are you enjoying watching the basketball games right now?
Okay. I don't think this tournament has been as dramatic so far as some of the previous seasons we've had. And, you know, I guess part of the first rounds is the lure of the major upset. Well, the top four seeds are 16-0. So we didn't have anybody in seeding 1 through 4 go down. There's not that, I wouldn't even say there's not the lovable Cinderella yet. McNeese is getting blasted right now, so they're going to be a distant memory here in a few hours.
I'm currently okay with this as a Purdue guy.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. For you are. There's, you know, I've always been a guy that loves to follow college hoops, but I've always been biased toward following the Big East teams, even when they've kind of pulled back here as being one of the major power conferences when Syracuse and Pitt and Louisville and all they jumped all to the ACC. I went to the Big East tournament, Madison Square Garden, about 6-7 years in a row with one of my friends, and it was just, to me, in terms of sports atmosphere, it was as good as it gets as just a spectator. So I've always watched the Big East, and I think St. John's, to me, is the story of the year in college basketball. I mean, this team hadn't won a Big East tournament in 25 years. They hadn't won it outright since the 80s. You know, this year with Patino going back to New York City and getting another team historically back. Now what he's got 7 different teams that he's coached the NCAA tournament at his age of being over 70. I think it's pretty impressive. They're a super fun team to watch because they play so hard. They play kind of old school basketball. They don't shoot the three. They don't fire up 50 threes a game like most teams do. They play amazing defense, and they wear you down as the game goes on. So I'm pulling for St. John's. I'm really looking forward to watching them today. I'll keep a corner of my eye on it during the Sabres game as they play at, like, I think 2:45. And, you know, a little New York, I guess, connection in the fact that they're a team from New York State. So that's, to me, I think, going to be the fun feel-good story. I hope it lasts all the way to the Final Four.
All right, we're late. So we got to get Brian Koziel to pregame with Brian Koziel. That's coming up next.